Blog Talk Radio.
So welcome to the V2V podcast, where your voices are heard, your stories are told, and your heart can begin to heal. And I'm your host, Dr. Marcy, America's voice for the voiceless. And just in case this is your first time tuning in, I want to assure you that this is a safe space, and we welcome you to bring your whole authentic self. And each week when we get together, you can expect some transparent and oftentimes uncomfortable conversations. But it's my sincerest wish that through it all, what is shared here will inspire you to grow through your discomfort. And our intention this evening with this conversation is that something that you hear will touch you in a way that empowers you to begin to make sustainable changes in your own life and relationship. And as you either begin or continue on your voiceless to victorious journey, you know that you are not walking the path alone. The phone lines are open tonight and will remain open for the duration of the show. So if you have questions or comments, we would love for you to call in. That number is 914-219-0880. And last week, if you tuned in, we visited with Dr. Monica Jackson and took a deep dive into the world of church hurt from the parishioner's perspective. And tonight we're going to expand on that conversation and journey into the church leadership. Tonight's guest is going to share his firsthand accounts as a former church elder and as a self-proclaimed pretender about his own personal experience of using power and position within the church to garner sex and to manipulate women. So y'all know this is a grown folks show with grown folks conversation. So let me get into my guest's wonderful bio here. Lamont Faison is a former law enforcement officer and academy trainer. He taught crisis prevention intervention as a certified instructor for the Department of Public Safety and counseled men and women that have been incarcerated in prison youth groups and one-on-one coaching, stressing the importance of self-awareness and mastering your emotions. He's a certified anger management specialist and the owner of Anger Management 702. And I can tell you, if you have not checked out his Instagram, his YouTube, make sure you go and do that, as well as his Anger Management 702. He's also a member of the National Association of Anger Management, and his specialties include anger response, de-escalation tactics, reacting versus response, and developing healthy relationships. Lamont is the author of the very telling books, Unveiling the Mask of the Pretender, and The Audacity to Think I Can. In addition, Lamont has a very powerful podcast entitled You Versus Yourself. And again, I encourage you guys, if you have not checked out this man's stuff after tonight's episode, make sure you go and do that. In preparation for the show tonight, I went through and was watching some videos and listened to some interviews that he did with some individuals. It's worth your time. It's worth your time. So, Lamont, my friend, welcome to the show. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. Thank you, Dr. Marcy, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You and I have a mutual friend in common, and so I was somewhat familiar with the work that you were doing with domestic abuse survivors and already sort of had you in mind as a potential guest for the podcast. But, man, listen, I ordered your book, Unveiling the Mask of the Pretender, which I have here on my desk right in front of me. And I wasn't even completely given a book. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, like, I need to reach out and have you on the show. I literally gobbled up the book in two sittings. And I was just left with this, okay, I need to know more. I need to know more. I got questions. And my kids
right.
will tell you about me, like, Mama may not have nothing else, but Mama always got questions. And so
yeah.
I sent you an email,
yeah,
and you were gracious enough.
Yeah, that's usually the response when they read the book.
I get it. I totally get it. And I encourage everybody to go out on Amazon and order Unveiling the Mask of the Pretender. I'm just going to go on the outset of the show and say that we'll talk about the book. We'll talk about the work that you're doing as we go, but they definitely got it. Like, you got to just read it for yourself. And the level of transparency is incredible. And I commend you and I applaud you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So I've blabbered enough now. So would you mind sort of filling in the listeners? So the ones that haven't read the book, who aren't familiar with you, share your story, share as much as you want, go into as much detail as you want. It's a grown folks conversation. So I turn the microphone over to you, my friend.
All right. Thank you. Well, my name is Lamont Faison, and as Dr. Marcy said, I'm an anger management specialist, and I'm a big believer in self-mastery and mastering self. However, I didn't start off like that. I'll start from my home, being brought up in a home. We were evicted a lot in my house, and I grew up with a stepfather who originally I thought that was my biological father. So I grew up hating him because he was emotionally abusive and he was also an alcoholic. And so, and we would get evicted a lot. And I recall coming home from school with friends and seeing orange letters posted on our door, which means we was evicted. So it was very embarrassing. I grew up with a lot of hate. And all I wanted, and I ran away, I remember running away from home at 17 years old. And end up coming back because I couldn't take care of myself at the time. But as soon as 18 years old came around, I ran to the military. And I said, well, yeah, I got to get out of this situation, so I got to do something. So I ran to the military. And the issue is that I was still me in the military. I was angry. I was upset. I wouldn't listen to anyone. So I had all this trauma that was going on in my life. And ultimately, I end up getting a bad conduct discharge and being kicked out of the Marine Corps. I think I was officially probably 20, but I think I was on the process of being out in 19. And so I walked around from Los Angeles, California. So I walked around L.A. after I got kicked out, walked around with my head down, you know, hanging out with some gang members and doing some things that we shouldn't be doing. And I never forget that how I felt about myself at that time. My self-esteem was low. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. And in those days, that was 1986. In those days, you know, the military meant a lot. You know, that was the big thing. If you got kicked out of the military, your chances of being successful in life was going to be slim to none. And so I believed that. I believed at that time. And so I walked around my self-worth, my self-esteem, I devalued myself, all of those things. And I remember getting a job at 7-Eleven and making $4.75. I think that was the minimum wage back then. It wasn't so much that I was working at 7-Eleven. It was just I believe that was my self-worth. I was only worth $4.75. So I went through this whole ordeal within myself. I contemplated suicide. I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I contemplated suicide, taking myself out. And I just felt like that I wasn't going to be anything and that I had ruined my life. And I remember in 1999, I believe it was. I remember being in my bathroom crying and looking in the mirror. And I told myself today, and I was crying, it's not all coming out of my nose. I remember saying, today you're going to believe in yourself. Just one moment, a moment of sobriety, you're going to believe in yourself. And I remember they had this job, and this was for Department of Corrections. And I knew I had a bad conduct discharge, so I knew the chance of me getting this job was going to be slim to none. But anyway, so I went down to this place, to Department of Corrections, and I met a chief there, Chief Page. I still remember his name. And I was suited up the whole nine, and I was crying still. And I said, sir, listen, I just need to be honest with you. I got a bad conduct discharge from the Marine Corps. Is that going to prohibit me from getting this job? And I remember him saying yes. He was sitting next to his secretary, and they both said yes. And I felt good about myself because I took a chance on myself. And so as I got in my car and started home, by the time I got to my house, remember, that's when we had answer machines. I could hear the answer mm-hmm. machine going off. And I remember the chiefs and the secretary on the end saying, I can hear her saying, Lamont, I picked up the phone, and she said, the chief liked the way you handled yourself, and we want you to come back down so we can get you an academy. And when I tell you, tears rolled down my eyes and my face, and I began to thank God. I mean, I was thanking everybody because I had lived this life for so many years that I was worthless, you know, and that I was and embarrassed and shame and felt guilty that I ruined my life. And so for me, this was an opportunity to start a new career. So, you know, I got into this career field. Long story short, I worked there for 7 months, ended up going to another facility, ended up being promoted to senior officer, became academy trainer. Anything I wanted to do, I did it, and it built confidence, and I built confidence in myself. I began to believe in myself. But all that was great, but I still had one issue. I was still masking my insecurities. You know, it was fine that I got a job. So I started attending church. And I remember meeting, I met a lot of women in church. And I remember the day when I became a minister and I was in minister class. I used that for myself. First of all, I felt good about myself. I felt like I had a little power. And so I was meeting these women. And I remember being boastful and proudful about, yeah, I'm a minister in a church, you know, one of those things. And it was more of a ploy to get you in because I certainly know that women like men in power. And I played that right. role because I got a lot of attention. You know, women thought I was good looking. I was suited up the whole nine, and I used that to my advantage. Now, I will admit that when I went to church, I didn't necessarily go to do that, but I did not want to show my insecurities. I didn't want to unmask those things that was going on within me. And so one of the things that I had that I was gifted in is running my mouth and being slick at the tongue. So I would use that to my advantage. And so, you know, I was messing around with the women. I still remember incidents where a woman shouted in church one day in Bible study, he's sleeping with me in the church and he's supposed to be a minister. I remember those incidents like yesterday. And this is right in Bible study. And, you know, because she was mad at me because I was starting to see somebody else. But the truth of the matter is she was correct. I was doing things that I shouldn't have been doing in the church, and I was praying on women and praying on their vulnerability inside of the church. And that went on for quite a while because the truth of the matter is that's like, you know, that goes on quite often in church, and a lot of people do it. So it wasn't like, oh, my God, he's the only one doing it. It's just something you kind of expect when you go to church, unfortunately. And so I played that game. Girl, they even had me in charge of the singles ministry.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, even when I talked to my friends, I said, man, you know, they had me in charge of the single ministry. But I was the wrong guy for that. I needed help. But I was masking all of my insecurities. I was masking all of my pain. I was masking all of those things that I grew up with, the traumas, the people saying you're not going to ever be amount to anything. And so the one thing that I can grasp and hold on to was, hey, I was a minister. And what happens in church? You're praying for people. You know, you got women coming up for prayer, some getting in my line on purpose, and I'm holding their hand and they're passing me their phone numbers. And I'm playing handsy with the women that I should be praying for. So, you know, it was a lot of issues going on within me. And here again, I was just masking the pain. And then one day, I fell in love with a young lady. And she was beautiful. She was amazing. She was educated. She was all of those things. And I want to tell your audience now that men or women, if you think getting married is going to help you with your proclivities and whatever issue you have going on, you need to think again. Because I thought like that. I said, well, if I get married, then I'll stop sleeping around. I'll stop, doing all these things with these women because I have a beautiful girl. She's in shape, all that good stuff that I like, and everything would be lovely. But I found out very quickly that it was not. I think 6 months in a relationship, I think I cheated on her. And I did this continuously throughout the marriage, even times that she didn't know of. At the time, I didn't understand why I was doing that. I really didn't, other than the fact that I haven't healed from anything and that I'm still doing exhibiting the same behavior I did when I was single. So that told me at some point that there's some work needed to be done. And I remember when she found out, she was sitting on a curb and she was crying. And that hit me. It touched me because I did love her. And it hurt me to my core. And I remember after we got a divorce, saying I got to change. Finance is great. Job, good. But my internal being is suffering. And I'm masking the pain. And you cannot heal if you're keeping secrets. You can't heal with all this stuff going on if you're faking it and masking it. So I remember, I think it was 2006 that I wrote Unveiling the Mask of the Pretender. My goal was to expose myself. And I was serious. I was serious at this time about changing. I was serious about this and getting myself together. And I wrote that book. And I'll tell you, it brought out a whole lot of emotions. I smiled in the book. I cried in the book. All of those emotions came out of me because I was cleansing myself. And I know one way to heal yourself is to expose all of the lies that you have told and everything about you. Now I give myself no excuse for not healing because everybody will know. And that's why I decided to put in the book. And, it's funny because I knew when I wrote the book, I was going to get hammered. I attended a lot of book clubs in Inglewood and L.A., book clubs, and I knew I was going to get smashed. So I was expecting it. And, they were like, why could you do this? Why'd you cheat? And I told them, I said, listen, when you're sick, and I was sick, when you're conditioned and when you unheal, you do a whole lot of things you don't know why you did. That was the honest answer. I didn't know why I did those things other than the fact that I'm unhealed and I was masking my behavior. And it's something, Dr. Marcy, that a lot of men, and maybe women, but certainly a lot of men, we're raised a certain way. Most of us, in the interviews that I had on my show, we're following a blueprint, right? Most men have cheated. I've had several interviews with men. Even if the spouse doesn't know it, the man has cheated at some point. So we're following the same playbook, the same blueprint. But it all comes back down to it's been cycled to us. My father was like this. My father before that was like that. I think my father has, 1, 2, 3. I think he has 4, 5 different baby mothers. All of us around the same age. That's my real father. I didn't even know him until I was 16 or 17. So even though I wasn't around him, didn't know who he was, we were following the same blueprint. And my sisters and brothers and people that know him would say, man, you just like your daddy. Well, I don't even know my daddy, right? But then when I met him, I can see that. He was a player. And I just talked to other men on the platform, and they would tell me the same thing. I saw my dad bring his girlfriend to the house when my mother wasn't here. So we're following the blueprint. But I was destined to change it. I was destined to change that cycle. I said, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to be the best version of myself. Whatever it takes, I'm going to make it happen. And I did. I wrote that book. I answered people's questions. I mean, I got cussed out, all kind of stuff, you know. And at the end of the day, I remember a young lady telling me, I was in Inglewood, and she says, y'all need to let up on this brother. She says, because the only reason why you know how he operated is because he was honest enough to come out and tell you his story. And mm-hmm. then she asked them, how many secrets are y'all holding that y'all mm-hmm. not telling nobody? Right? So for me, it was a cleansing. It set me up on my journey. Even if I didn't understand it at the time, I knew at some point that I would be talking about it. And I believed that I was going to be an awesome individual who's going to assist people to get themselves to the next level in life and to absolutely believe in themselves. And that is actually the path that I'm on today. So that's how we got here. That's how we got to teaching anger management, teaching it in the jails, writing books and doing all those things and going on platforms and public speaking forums to speak to people, because people are amazed at the transparency in the book. But I'm telling people, this is actually what it takes for you to heal. You got to expose it. I'm not saying you got to go write a book, but I'm certainly saying you got to be completely honest with yourself. And so in my book, to make sure that I was going to be honest, I think in the first chapter I wrote, I preyed on women in the church. I was an addict, and their vulnerability was my drug of choice. I would seek them out like a lion stalking his prey. This was easy. I was a single minister. I started off like that on purpose. I wanted to come right out the gate and let the reader know I'm not playing. I wanted to let the reader know this dude's serious. He already blasted his behavior in the first line. And that was right. important to me. So when I speak to people, when I speak to individuals, I always let them know, you got to be absolutely 150% honest with yourself. And that's where we are today.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right about the fact that you blasted it all, like, in the beginning. Matter of fact, the prologue, when you end the prologue, because I have the book here, you said, even in this present moment, I'm battling the spirit of lust and the fear of being alone, and nobody knows it but me. And
right.
then you go into chapter one with I prayed on women in the church. I was like, well, all right,
right.
then. Okay, uh-huh. Yeah, let's go ahead and dig
right.
on into this.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it does take, you know, I always say you can't heal what you can't speak. And so,
right.
you know, people try and, you know, like, oh, I'll just put it for myself and nobody's got to know, but you kind of need that accountability. And so I'm very much with you. Like, my very first book, I told all kinds of secrets about myself, things that my mom still doesn't know to this day. She's never been offered that book. She's never asked for that book. She will not be given that book by me. but you do have to get it out there. You have to dump it. You have to be accountable to it. And when I did my first book, one of the things one of my mentors called right after I sent it to the editor. And mm-hmm. he said, hey, baby girl, how you doing? I was like, I'm good. And he said, I just finished the book, and I just sent it. He was like, yeah, how do you feel? And I was like, I feel like crying.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, what? And I was like, you don't understand. Like, I told some stuff in that book that nobody knows about me. And at that time, you know, I was building my business, and I was trying to create a brand, and, you know, I was just like, but I put it all on the line, very similar to what you're saying. Like, you have to, if you truly want, and that's what I love about, you know, the radical self results. If you want radical results, you have to sometimes do radical things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's important, too, for your mindset, right? One of the things that I shouldn't say I fault the church, but I think the church doesn't do well, is like anger management should be taught in our churches.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of our pastors are angry. And just because you're a pastor or a preacher don't give you a license to say I can counsel people in every area of their life. I know angry preachers. I used to be the armor bearer for a preacher that ultimately killed his wife. I had another preacher friend die, had a brain aneurysm, and he was an angry guy. And so we got to get to the root of the matter and stop talking about Jesus going to do everything. right? This is some accountability to you. God has given us the ability to heal ourselves. We got to take the time and exercise to make those things happen. God didn't jump out the closet and say, go heal yourself. I had to do that. I had to put in the work. I had to go through the tears. I had to deal with the trauma. I got to make that choice. I got to move to that level. And that, in my mind, is what opened up my real ministry. And now I can go do that with power, strength, confidence, and courage when I go out there. And listen, I told you everything in the book. I can go out and talk to anybody. I talk to inmates. I talk to all of them because I've already been there. I understand it. And there's no story that you can tell me that's going to knock me off my rocker. I done heard it all, you know. So I think it's important for us to be transparent with ourselves and stop faking.
Yeah, one of the things you said, you were talking about when you went to the military and even then when you got your discharge or whatever, the bad conduct discharge, and in every phase until you began the phase to start healing, you said the one thing was I was still me. And people forget you still take you everywhere you go. So no matter what you're trying to hide, that's in your purse, it's in your pocket, it's in your spirit, it's in your heart, it's in your conversation, it's everywhere. It permeates the space that you're in because it's who you are. And I think sometimes, you know, and that's what I love so much about the book and the term pretender, because we do try and put on these masks, and whether it's just a mask that we're okay and that we're not afraid or that we're not hurt or not angry or whatever, we wear all of these different masks and we're still us inside. We're still, you know, for me, it was the broken little girl that was 6 years old hiding in the closet while my mother was being beaten. Like, that little girl called the shots for my grown-up whole self well into my 30s and 40s until I took the steps. And it took domestic violence. It took becoming physically abused for me to have, just like you said, the conversation in the bathroom mirror. Like, that's the conversation I feel like everybody has to have, that naked, bare, tears flowing, all pure, like, that's the conversation you have. That mirror conversation is a game changer, because that's where I was like, this can't happen. Like, the next, if I make another bad decision like this, it could kill me. This one almost killed me. But for the grace of God, I'm out.
Yes.
But if I keep doing what I'm doing. Yeah, no, go ahead. I'm just rambling because I was listening to you and I'm like,
that was facts. I'm listening.
Yes.
I was just listening to what you were saying.
I think everybody has to. I think everybody has to have that mirror conversation. And until you can get naked with yourself, there's not a whole lot anybody else can do if you don't want it. And it's that conversation with that, because that's the person you look at every day.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so I think it's a big deal. That prologue that you're talking about is interesting, because when I wrote that, when I tell you that was spirit moving me, I didn't know I could write like that. But the doors was opening. God was speaking to me. I was healing as I was writing that book. And if you notice, Marcy, at the end of the book, I don't leave it with a happy ending. It doesn't say I got it together at the end of the book.
Right.
You know, it says I just ended where I was at. And I think I say something like that, you know, you're probably thinking this going to end with a happy ending. But it didn't. It ended right where I was at. I was going to be honest. I wasn't healed when I wrote the book, still in the midst of my stuff. The only difference is I was going to expose it. I wanted to heal. I wanted to be better. I wanted to change the cycle, you know, and that was important to me. So the men and women that I approached me today, and we had these conversations, I'm able to be real with them. I'm telling them that you will not heal until you expose yourself, you know, and all of this. And we do a lot of this in the church. I mean, we do. I mean, a lot of things we pick up church jargon, you know, hallelujah, praise to God, I'm highly favored, all that good stuff. But you ain't operating like you highly favored. You ain't functioning in that capacity. It sound good.
Right.
It's cliche, you know. I'm blessed other than that. Okay, yeah, great. we got to deal with our issues. And one of the things that I am working on is that I want to get into these churches soon and talk about our anger from the pulpit. I want to be able to talk about that. Marcy, there is no power from the pulpit if you're in the mess that you're in. It's only words, tinkling brass. That's all it is. You're just talking. The power comes when we actually feel that thing. Do you remember, you may remember this, remember years ago, a lady named Juanita Bynum wrote a book called No More Sheets.
The name sounds familiar.
And when I tell you, when she went to that, and she was hooked to T.D. Jakes as well at one time, and she talked about her struggle as she was an evangelist going around from church to church and place to place, but she was battling within her flesh with her sexual desires and all that stuff going on within her. We related to that so much, and we respected her so much, because we really didn't hear that from the pulpit. You hear the preachers preaching, and sometimes you hear them say, ooh, yeah, back in the day, y'all, I was so-and-so, so-and-so, but they never go in depth. I think when you tell your story, it helps people. It uplifts people. It encourages people to come out to say, you know what, if he can do it, I want to talk to him. I want to do that too. I want to get my life together. I want to stop pretending. You know, and that's important to me. Even now, as I deal with domestic violence survivors, the whole nine, it's the same thing. They want to heal from those wounds, from the trauma that was caused in their life, but they're faking it. They're saying everything is okay when it's not. I'm looking for people to heal for real so they can be pure, so we can affect other people's lives. I think, for me, that is important. Girl, I was in church selling drugs.
I was
in church. Listen, if you call Bishop House at Mountaintop Faith Ministries in Las Vegas, ask it. And I used to, let me tell you, I was crazy. Sometimes I would see him driving down the street. I wasn't even going to the church. I would go off and on at the time. And I would give him my tithe from the drug money that I was in.
And he graciously took it, I'm guessing.
Oh. But, you know, and I ain't mad at him. I was a ticket, too. We try to build a church. I get it. I get it. But he liked me, though. And he would always tell his story. And he'll tell that story today. I used to see Brother Monte driving down the street. He'd see me on the street. He'd stop and give me his tithe. It was all true, you know. But the reason why I was in and out of church, because I was ashamed. See, we're back to that insecurity again. So I was ashamed to go up in there. I didn't think I belonged in there. And the issue with us in church is that it's supposed to be a place for the sick, but you have so many people judging you in there as if they're not sick, that you run right on up out of there. You know? So, a lot of that went on. I think for me, it was time to get myself together and cleanse myself. And I think that became my priority. And that's how I ended up to what I'm doing today. I unveiled The Mask of the Pretender. I wrote the book. I put it out there. I did the book clubs. I did the podcast. I did the shows. And I even did a show that I used to do called The Raw Truth. It's in video form. And I just told them straight up, I prayed on women in church. My behavior was unacceptable. I didn't give them no room to ask me no questions, because I gave them all the information up front, you know, because that's how far I've gotten as far as courage is concerned to better myself. And I know there is no other way, because I watch too many people pretend. I watch preachers fake it, you know. And typically what happens is that most of the time we hide behind the things that we do well. And what do I mean? If you got a preacher that preaches well, he hides behind that. So he don't have to unveil whatever his issues are. He does the thing well. You got the athletes. They hide behind what they do well. Then you come to find out later that they got issues. You know, one of the things that hurt me the most, because I went to his church and I followed this guy, and that was Bishop Eddie Long in Georgia. Remember that guy? I was like, wow, really? Who knew that? You know, who knows these things that we're going? When are we going to talk to somebody and say, you know what, I really got a problem? And you see this countless times in the pulpit, preachers having babies with other women and they're married. How can that be power in that congregation? How can anybody be getting healed of anything in all of that chaos? I never knew that the Most High operated in chaos like that. You know, there's no freedom in that. And so I took that to heart. I said, listen, you got to be pure. You got to change your whole game up. You got to change the cycle. And that's what I'm talking to little boys about and women today. I'm changing the cycle. We have to do something different, and we have to be on a different level than we have in the past because something has to change.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was interesting was the fact that, because, you know, with me when working with women, I'm always telling them, like, you got to own your own shit. You can't just blame mm-hmm. everything on everyone else. And so, yes, you were a church elder. Yes, you were in the leadership. Yes, you had a position of power. But you said yourself in your own statement just now, you were like, they were passing me their phone numbers while they coming up for prayer. Okay, so yes, you have accountability, but they have accountability too. And, you know, I think sometimes it's easy to say, oh, well, he did this and he did X and he did Y, but what did you do? Like, we have to be honest about what we did, because a lot of times we want to pose up as a victim of our circumstance, and what we really are is a product of our choices. And that's not quite an easy pill to swallow when you realize, you know what? Yeah, I may not have created this whole circumstance, but I made choices along the way that put me in position to be exactly where I'm at.
Absolutely.
And it's not always somebody else's fault.
Yeah, it's true. And so I've come to the conclusion that we need to heal as a people. That's the bottom line. I always, when I'm talking to men and speaking to men, one of the things that I always say is that, especially when it relates to DV, is that we're trying to create these women to be what we want, but we don't have the leadership skills. So when that woman is not necessarily listening to you, you want to hit her. But that's all we know. Because when we're raised, most of us are told not to cry. Vulnerability is a weakness to us growing up, especially if you're growing up in a neighborhood. Nobody's talking about a man being vulnerable. In fact, when you cry, you're told what? Not to cry. So when that woman does not listen to you, you only got one emotion. And that's the anger. That's the aggression. Because we're told not to be sensitive. Vulnerability is a weakness. Don't cry. So when I meet these women and they don't do what we want to say, we don't have no leadership skills. So we want to put our hands on them. We want to call them bitches and hoes. We don't call them out their name. And that's how we get by. But we need true leadership. And so we got to heal from those things. And so I now teach that vulnerability is actually not a weakness, it's a strength. Because it puts you in a position to change. You know, it puts you in a position to submit to that thing that's going to allow me to get better. But our ego is off the charts. We don't want people to think that we're wrong. We always right.
On that ego point, you shared in a video, I saw it on, I think it was on your Instagram, but you shared, I think it was six things that can tell, because I do this whole thing on ego versus love. I loved what you said. Will you share those six things if you have them kind of off the top of your head? You were talking about how to know if ego is running your relationship.
And there are my six signs. One of those things is the need to be right all the time. When you're in a house with your spouse and you're the only one right and nobody else is right, it's just you. The other one is that the man begins to stop talking. I'm in control. I'm running this show. The woman wants to talk. He shuts up. He don't have anything to say. That's two of those things. The other one is we play the victim. You know, when we're having a conversation and you say something, I'm the victim. I did this because of A, B, and C. If you would have let me sleep, if you would have did A, B, and C, I wouldn't have hit you.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things that we do causes us to be the victim. And if you topple that with, I only want to be right and you're not right, then that woman doesn't have a chance in our relationship because you're not with the guy, you're with the ego. The other thing is control. I got to have control. I want to control you. And this is important, and I definitely need the ladies to hear this. When a man starts telling you what color to paint your nails, what clothes to wear, what shoes to wear, how to wear your hair, I am telling you that's a problem.
Run.
You have to pay attention right off the bat. The other thing is arrogance, pride. If I wanted to say sorry, I can't because I'm too prideful, I'm too arrogant. And you couple with all those things at the end of the day, even when we're wrong, it is tough for us to apologize. That's the sixth one. It's hard for us to apologize when the ego is in front. And for people who don't know, the ego is actually the false self. The ego itself is not real. It's an illusion. The ego will have you get shot by a bullet and kill your real self. Let me explain.
Right.
When we on the street to get ready to get in a fight and somebody got a gun, the ego jumps out there and say, shoot me. If you bad, shoot me. That's the ego talking. But when you get shot, the real you that just got shot, and it was your ego that started it. So the ego is the forefront, and we got to tame that ego. We got to calm that ego down so it's more of me speaking. It's more of me in the relationship that's talking to Dr. Marcy. You're getting the real me. You're not getting the ego. I've humbled myself so the ego's not in the forefront. It's me, the real me. So those were my top six when I was talking about.
Yeah, and I love that list. Thank you for going over those because, you know, and just now when you were talking about it, you know, you brought up a couple of examples that, you know, women do, and I'm going to say women because I'm speaking from my personal experience and perspectives, right? But I think some men do it too. But one of the things you said was about when he starts telling you what color to paint your nails, what clothes to wear, all of that kind of stuff, how to do your hair. My violent attacker, you know, I overlooked that. I minimized those things and took it as, oh, you know, because he would want us to like match when we would go out. And there was one day he wanted me to wear a red. I told him the day before that I was going to wear a red dress. And when we got to the house, I had something else on. And he literally just said, where's the red dress, Marcy? Where's the red dress? Over and over and over until I was just like, well, damn, okay, never mind. I just went upstairs and I changed. But it didn't, like, I didn't understand the power and control and how all of that works and how you can use things to leverage your position of power without it making the other person feel like they're being controlled. You know, to me, I kind of took it like, oh, that's cute. Like, he kind of likes us to go out. Like, he likes us to look. It was weird to me in one hand because, like, we're grown. Who the hell does that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't question it, you know. And so I love that you brought that up. And then the other thing that you talked about was not being able to apologize. And in one of my relationships, we were living together at the time, and he had not come home overnight, and it was the third time. And I just walked into the kitchen, and I looked at him. Huh?
That's me. I didn't come
home. Well, so here's what happened. So the first time, I was worried because it was out of character. We had a conversation about it. The second time it happened, I'm like, you're too grown for this. You need, like, this was not part of the agreement. why would you do, like, what could you possibly be doing that precludes you from coming home? Like, if you're drinking, then don't drink as much. Like, I just didn't get it. So we had a conversation. So yes. The third time it happened, and his arrival times got later and later. So, like, the first time it was, like, 6 or 7 in the morning. The second time it was, like, 8 or 9. The third time it happened, it was, like, 11 o'clock. And I just walked into the kitchen where he was standing, and I just looked at him, and he was like, oh, we're not about to have this conversation again, are we? And I looked at him, and I thought for a minute, and by this time now, I'm well along my healing journey. Like, I don't deal with all the nonsense that I used to deal with in previous relationships. So I was like, I said, you know what? No, we'll never have this conversation again. And I walked away. And then the next day I told him he needed to move out. Like, I'm not going to, we're not going to keep having this conversation. It's stupid. But right. A simple conversation, to your point, if you're not operating in a space of ego, a simple conversation could have fixed it. It could have salvaged, because it wasn't like the whole relationship was unhappy. Sure. I just didn't like that particular behavior. And it's not even about sex or anything like that, about if you're sleeping with somebody else. You could sleep with somebody else at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. What time you come home has no bearing, no relevancy on your ability to be faithful. So that wasn't even the issue. To me, it was just disrespectful.
Yes.
And that's all it amounted to. I didn't care what you were doing. You're an adult. So I'm not managing what you do, who you're with, what time, like none of that. But to not come home is disrespectful. And right. I'm not being in a relationship with somebody who's disrespectful. And so, but those were the things, like when you're talking about that, I think sometimes we don't even realize that we're being manipulated or that we're being controlled. You know, that whole, oh, we're not about to have this conversation, that was a flex. And had I not recognized it as a flex, one of two things was going to happen. Either we was going to get into a big-ass argument that was going to escalate, or I was going to hush, push it under the rug, be quiet, and not say anything about it again. But the flex failed on me because I recognized it for what it was. But I don't think that a lot of times we do. So that's the whole pretender thing. That's what I realized, and I didn't have a word for it until I read your book. That's what that was.
Yes.
So how do we identify that before we're in the relationship, though?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to tell you. So what I actually believe is that women move too fast with men. Even to this day, I can think about how many women I could have took advantage of because they moved too fast. And I'll give you a story. I met a woman, and 30 days, she says, well, you know, if we ain't going to be boyfriend and girlfriend in 30 days, then I don't want to do it. And, of course, I let her go. That didn't make no sense to me. Listen, I've already been married twice. I'm trying to get to know you. And I told her, I said, listen, if you don't take time, you don't even know who you're dealing with, right? I could be that guy still in the book, and I'm making out the mess out of you. You don't know. You don't even know me. You look at my looks. You say I got it going on. You see me doing some things, and that's cool with you, you know. But you got to actually get to know the individual. The reason why you don't know men or pretend because you're not taking enough time to find out. Are you so in awe of the individual? He's cute. He treats me well. So most pretenders do that. Most pretenders will take you out. And I know this might shock your audience, but let me tell you what I tell women all the time. Stop letting a man pay for your food when you're getting to know him. Stop giving him that house. Pay your own freaking – you don't know him, and he does not know you. Right? You're not courting. You're not getting ready to marry the person. You're simply getting to know him. And because what happens at some point, it becomes leverage. If you, I don't know, Marcy, if you looked at one of the videos, I think it's on my You Versus Yourself podcast. It's a young lady, after I finished telling the story like I'm telling you, she said that's exactly what the abuser did to her. He paid for everything. Mm-hmm. What he was doing is gaining control. Oh, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got it. Oh, I got it. Right? I'm gaining and getting that leverage. And so, and I said, so what did you do? She said, well, yeah, I let him pay. And then, you know, things progress, and I let him do this. Then I let him, and what he was doing is gaming you. He was getting the leverage on you and against you. And he was abusive. And then one day she went somewhere, and I tell the story because it's public. She went somewhere one day. She was going out somewhere. And guess who showed up? He did.
Yeah.
He wasn't invited.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I thought you were staying at home. And so women get a little offended when I say that. But you don't need a man to pay your way. And if you do, you should stay at home. If you
right.
don't have the money to pay on food, stay at home. Because most of the time, this stuff is gaming. He's a gentleman. That don't mean he's a gentleman because he paid for your food. You got to pay attention to the red flag. Stop, especially in the beginning. You're going to get a man leverage. You got to pay him for your food. It sounds good. You ain't coming out your pocket. And you good with that. That's a bad move. And it's countless women who will tell you that story. You know, and the other young ladies I had that was dealing with domestic violence on the show, they was talking about the same thing. I said, listen, y'all can't get past the packages. The man come mm-hmm. home, he says he's sorry, he bring you a gift, and you cool. Until you sitting on the couch, and he got a gun mm-hmm. in his lap. And he asking you, where you going? Now you stuck. What happened? Just gamesmanship. And you're not paying attention. And so many women are so lonely these days that they fall for almost anything because they mm-hmm. want to be in relationship. And we should take our time, heal for ourselves so we can see. That's the same thing with men. If I want a great relationship, I need to be conscious of what I'm doing and what kind of woman I'm dating. You know, I met a woman, she was abusive. She was a drinker and a smoker. Well, I don't allow that. Those are non-negotiables for me. I like a woman in shape. That's me. I'm not getting something that I don't want. And I'm paying attention mm-hmm. to the red flags. And all of us should be doing that same thing. And please don't be operating out of desperate mode and desperation. People pick that up. When I said in church that I prayed on their vulnerability, I can tell where these women were at, their insecurity. I can read that. She said her boyfriend didn't buy her roses. Guess what I did? I bought her roses. Her husband didn't do this. Guess what? I did that. You're giving me too much information, and you don't know me. And so we got to be very careful when we open that lid talking about I'm going to date somebody. Just get to know the person. Go get coffee. I don't need him to buy me a steak dinner or her to buy me a steak dinner. But we get flattered by those things. And then in the long run, it ends up hurting us. You know there's a 57% divorce rate in America. It's the same percentage mm-hmm. for the most part in the church. So something's not working. Domestic violence is, I think Vegas is in the top one or two with Alaska. Domestic violence is huge in the church as well. We need to open mm-hmm. our eyes. How smooth talking he is. Go talk to his mother. Go talk to his ex-girlfriend. Go talk to his ex-wife. I told a young lady one time, Dr. Marcy, I said, you want to get to know me? Go talk to my ex-wife. She was shocked.
mm-hmm.
No, go talk to my the one I cheated on. Go talk to her.
But you're right,
she
though. And I think a lot of times, for women, we don't, you know, this was true for me. So some of the things that my ex used to say, he actually was confessing to me that there was a physically violent, volatile relationship with him and his ex. And
mm-hmm.
when I'm listening to the conversation, I'm listening to him tell me what she did and how they ended up physically in altercations, right? But how I'm processing it is I don't do those things. So that's not going to ever be me.
Right.
Not understanding fully that his abusive tendencies doesn't have anything to do with who he's with. He'll be abusive to any woman he's with until he's healed.
That's his behavior, yes.
Right, right. But I think we want to think that, you know, that we can love people through it. We can love them through their pain, and we can love them through their healing. But at what risk? And I don't think we ever take a time to assess that. And like you were talking about allowing people to pay for meals and things like that. What happens, I feel, is, and tell me from a man's perspective, I feel like guys will do that for so long, and then there's a buildup. So then when something happens and he needs to do whatever he needs to do, now as a woman, I feel guilty. Oh, he always does this for me. He always does that for me. And so I capitulate to his demands or his needs in spite of how I feel about it, because he's done all those things. He's paid for this,
right,
or he's bought that, or he gave me money for this. Like,
right,
no. One is not an offset for the other. And I don't think
we
ever stop to really think about that.
No. And I think it's important. And the reason why I say, you take away the like I was telling this young lady, take away the leverage of the individual when you take control of your own stuff, right? So if I'm playing on or praying on you, I'm thinking, okay, she ain't going to be as easy to pray on because she's in control of what she's doing. First of all, I can't pay for her. Well, maybe we can go back to your house. No, you can't come to my house either, brother, right? All of those things, I'm saying, okay, I might leave you alone. If I'm a pretender and I'm playing, I'm probably going to leave you alone because I don't want to deal with you. Because you have your guard up, you're cautious, and you're not going to be so easily preyed on. And so it's easy for men to start paying for you because there's usually a motive. Now, listen, most of us want sex. So I don't want nobody to pretend like men don't want sex. We do want sex at some point, even if we're a good dude or mean to do you harm. We still want sex at some point. That's always going to be in there because that's who we are as men. The question is, how do I go about that? Do I want some type of relationship with this woman to make that happen? Or am I trying to do something overnight or whatever the case may be, but I'm manipulating you to make that happen? The issue I see with most women is that I know women have to see those red flags. Because some things be obvious. I know a situation of a young lady. Listen to this story. They went to a hotel, and in the hotel, they don't even know each other that well. In the hotel, the desk clerk asked for some information, and the young lady gave it to him. The guy got upset, went off, and cursed her out in the middle of the hotel. Now, watch this. She don't know him that well. In my mindset, that's a good time for me to bounce. You disrespected me and you embarrassed me, but she didn't. When we had the conversation, I said, I'm telling you to leave that man alone, because this is a friend of mine. Leave that man alone because he's abusive. How about a month later, he was abusive.
Wow.
And she had to call the police to get a restraining order. Had to go to court, and he was stalking her. And so men know, especially conscious men, we know the tricks of unhealed people. And I've seen them all. I see them in work all the time. So we have to get to a point where we say, listen, I don't want to be with somebody so bad that I eliminate these red flags. And let me take my time in getting to know this individual. Because sometimes we'll get so comfortable with you that we'll tell on ourselves. I'm just saying. We'd have talked so much and told so many stories. By the time we get to the third or fourth time, you'd be caught on to something. Now, wait a minute. I thought you said A, B, and C. You know, and so women have to.
We got to be listening for it, or we're not going to hear it because we're going to hear what we want to hear. And, you know, you could tell, like I said to my ex, like, he told me he put hands on her. She put hands on him too, but I heard, well, I would never do those things. I don't argue. And I'm not going to fight you. They didn't stop him from beating on, kicking down my door and holding me hostage and doing all the things he did to me. Like, it didn't stop any of the things that led up to it that I also minimized and tried to make excuses for. So when we come back, though, I want to go take a quick music break, grab me some water. And when we come back, though, I want you to take a little bit deeper dive into that, like the whole part about when you're talking about we'll tell on ourselves. And I want you to give some more explanations because I think my audience really, really needs still benefit from that. So we'll be right back. Give us about 1 minute, grab some water, and we'll be right back with B2B Podcast with my guest tonight, Mr. Lamont Faison. We are having a wonderful conversation. We'll be right back.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Park without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised.
All right, y'all, and we're back. And as you heard, the revolution will not be televised. However, it will be aired here on Blog Talk. So I'm here tonight with my guest. This is Dr. Marcy, Voice America's Voice for the Voiceless, and my guest tonight is Mr. Lamont Faison, and we are talking about unveiling the mask of the pretenders. Lamont has given his true confessions of some things that he used to do, and he's now flipped it around, turned it around, and now he's helping other people with their anger issues and counseling women who have been victims of domestic violence. If you have questions or would like to call in, the number is 914-219-0880, and we welcome your calls. And Lamont, so before we went on break, you were talking, you shared the example of the lady in the hotel room and how you tried to tell her, like, these are the signs, you're missing this, like, you need to leave this guy alone. So will you share with the listeners some other things that, you know, that, as you know, because I have my list of red flags, but I'm a woman. So right. I'm asking from a man who knows, like, what are some of the things that I need to look out for, my sisters need to look out for? What do we need to be on watch for? And we talked about, like, letting them pay for everything and stuff like that. But what else?
Let me, I say this in every conversation I have. Let me say this, ladies. When you're getting to know someone, especially a man, who cares what color he likes? Who cares what he likes to do? I don't care about any of those things. You know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about your past relationships. If we're getting to know each other, I'm going straight to the nitty-gritty, and I do that now with women. I want to go to the straight nitty-gritty, and I want to talk about it. First thing, and then you get a lot from a man, and you check out his demeanor when you talk to him about his past relationships. That's extremely important. First of all, that's a substance conversation. It's an important conversation, and we're talking about getting to know each other. I don't care if it's the first date, second date, or third date, but that's what we're going to be talking about. If the person does not want to talk about that, then they can kick rocks. Because I don't care what's your favorite color. I don't care if you like to go to the movies or you don't. I want to deal with the real issues that we have in these relationships today. So I told a young lady, this is what I suggest. When you meet somebody and y'all sitting down having coffee, whatever you're talking about, ask him about his relationships. Then watch his demeanor. Ask him, has he ever been abusive? Then watch his demeanor. If he thinks those are too much of a question, then you should let him walk. Why? I'm talking about things that actually matter to me. I was watching a movie, Marcy. I don't know if you ever seen this movie called Finding Forrester. Sean Connery was an actor. Huh?
No, I haven't.
Sean Connery told a young man, he says, the key to a question is to ascertain information that's going to be beneficial to you. And that's what I'm telling women. Ask the questions that are beneficial to you. And I do want to know about your past relationship. You're single, so you say, so let's have that conversation. I don't care why you're single. I want to know about your past relationships. And you watch a man's demeanor if he's comfortable with that conversation. Because a guy like me, I'm going to welcome that conversation, right? I'm in a different place. Going to be amazing if you ask me that question, because that's the question I'm going to talk to you about. I want to ask you about the same thing. Let's talk about your past relationships. You know, what would your ex-wife say about you now? Would you have a problem me talking to your ex-wife? All of those things, and then watch their behavior. Watch how they operate. And when men tell you something, especially if it's something of substance, keep a note of it. Make sure it's duly noted. But I remember one time that I was telling the story to this young lady, and I think I mixed up the women I was talking to. And I remember saying something. She said, I thought you said A, B, and C. Girl, I was trying to recover so fast. I forgot what I said to recover from it, but she had caught me in something, and she was listening. And she said, I thought you said you were C, and now I'm stuck. That young lady never called me back. This was early back in the, I think it was 2006 or 2005, but she never called me back. And she shouldn't have called me back. She caught me in a lie is what she did. But if we listen and pay attention, and if I'm getting to know him, I'm not being fooled by all his slick talking. I'm listening to his words, to his actions. I'm paying attention to the times that he called me and the time that he's unavailable. Why can't I call him at 8 o'clock? What's going on? Why you only call me when you drive in your car? See, ladies, y'all got to pay attention to this stuff. Every time I talk to you, you're in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Why you not at home? Right? And I'm not saying the person's doing anything. I'm saying, but these are things you got to start asking. And then when you ask these questions, listen to the person's answers, their responses. Pay attention to their demeanor. Because there was a time where I was married. So every time I would talk to this young lady, I was driving. Or I was outside. And she never called home to that. Right? I was never at home when I talked to her. All she knows that most of the time in the daytime, I would call her. At nighttime, I told her I was sleeping. I go to bed early. You know, I came up with some excuse. First of all, it was 6:30. So, I mean, but the point is, you got to pay attention to what that guy's telling you and not be so involved and enthrived in him because he's good looking, he's gorgeous, whatever the case may be. Pay attention to his words. If you are looking for an honest and a healthy relationship, you're going to want a healthy man. And that's my advice. Pay attention to everything that that man said. Ask substantive questions. Here again, I don't care what your favorite color is. I don't even care what you like to do. I want to talk about your past relationships. So how'd you end up on a dating site? That's how I would open up. How did you end up on a dating site? That's how I met you. So let's talk about it. You know, as soon as somebody started blaming the other person for everything that went on that relationship, that's probably a red flag. Well, you know, my ex used to do so-and-so, so-and-so. That's a red flag. Dr. Marcy, you just got through telling me that about the guy.
Mm-hmm.
When you met him, he was confessing, but he was talking about it with the other person. He never said that I was the abusive. You know, somebody start blaming the other person, you want to keep your eyes open. You want to pay attention. You also want to know if he's an ex-felon. You also want to know what he went to jail for. I would be asking all of those questions. I'm not wasting no time talking about what color you like. Do you like to travel? I don't care about none of that. I want to get to the substance. And if that's too heavy for you a first date, then you're probably not the one. Because a person like me is going to welcome that type of conversation. You want to ask us the question. You're trying to get to know me. I could talk about what color you like later. But as soon as I find out that you was in domestic violence and you hit your woman, I'm going anyway. So it don't matter what color you like. You know,
right.
And the guys, they're alive, just keep talking to them. At some point, they'll tell on themselves, because we always do.
Yeah, and you were talking about the timing of conversations, and it does make a difference. Like, once you've gone through the healing process and you've, you know, I mean, I've studied behavior and all kinds of things now since my assault and, you know, doing the work that I do. But so I was dating a guy, and we were long distance, and I mean, I was going back and forth. Like, he's coming to see me, I'm coming to see him. It's completely open. Everything's transparent. We're FaceTiming at bedtime, like, all kinds of stuff, right? Completely open, completely transparent. And then all of a sudden, I noticed exactly what you're saying. All of a sudden, he's only calling me from his car. And so I didn't think anything of it. I noticed it, but I didn't think too much about it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's weird, for a day or two. And then about the third day, I'm like, okay, Marcy, you need to really pay attention to this. Like, what, this behavior's off, because it was a complete switch up from how we had been. And then by day four, I asked him, I said, is there something that I need to know? Because all of a sudden, like, we never talk when you're at home. We don't have our FaceTimes at night. Like, you know, we would talk while we're in bed and whatever, getting ready to go to bed. Like, what's going on? And he's kind of hem-hawing, and I'm just busy, and I've been tired, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, well, you know, is that something I need to know? And so I was like, well, call me tonight, then, when you go to bed. He never called. So the next day, I said, all right. Enough's enough. Your behavior has completely switched up in less than a week. What the hell is going on? And after some prodding from me and some insistence that, like, we don't ever have to talk again. Like, I'm fine, but you can either tell me the truth and we can see if there's something salvageable, or you can choose to continue to lie to me, in which case we're done. So he admits to me that him and his ex-wife, or not ex, his wife and him had been separated for like 2 years. And so we had been dating for like maybe 6 months of the 2 years. And she had moved back into the house. And he says, so,
right.
So then he tries to say, oh, this is to help cover bills and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, bullshit, y'all got back together. Because if it's just a roommate situation, like, there's no sharing beds. There's no, you don't have to hide nothing. It's like, I see other people, you still see other people, like, we're good. So y'all got back together, say that, and we're done. And it was just like,
see the, yeah.
He didn't know what to do with it. And like, I told him, I said, I'm not mad at you, because everybody has to make choices for themselves. And so you made a choice for yourself and for your family, which is fine. It impacted me in a way that I'm not okay with, so I can't be in a relationship with you anymore. Like, I'm not mad at you, but we're done.
The key thing in here, too, is that I must tell women to take back your own power. And what I mean by that, see, personally, after he said, call me tonight, and he didn't call, I wouldn't have talked to him again.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm confused. You told me to call you tonight. It didn't happen. You already been acting funny. I'm going to make the decision. I'm not going to allow you to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because I already did. I don't even need him to tell me anymore. See, to me, those are the things
right. That
set us up. I do not need to know, because I already know what's going on. And if you couldn't call
right.
me after you told me, I'm already out. I'm going to make the decision. I'm not going to leave it up to the man to come up and try to get himself out of the situation. Because in some cases, that worked for some men, right? I'm
yeah.
good. You didn't call
yeah.
me. Always suspicious that you're calling me in your car. I know something is going on. You said call tonight. That didn't happen. I wouldn't have heard from him again, because I would have been done. I would have made my own decision, what I was going to accept for myself. And so
mm-hmm.
all these second and third chances, nah, something was already weird about it, you know. And
mm-hmm.
and if you panicked in these conversations, you picked up on it. You knew it was something wrong. But the day he didn't call, when he said call, I'd have been done. He don't get
mm-hmm.
to make a decision for you. You in control of what you're doing. And that's what women need to stand. I need to be in control. You know, if a man come home at 4 in the morning, that dude ain't out there doing no good. I was coming home at 4 in the morning, and I told my wife I was out with the boys. The problem is I don't never stay out till 4 in the morning. What I was doing was sleeping with two women at the state line. That's what I was doing. Something that I wasn't supposed to. So, you know, we might as well keep it real. I got a friend that said we might as well keep it funky. We keeping it funky. You got to pay attention, seriously. You got to pay attention to our behavior. But you got to ask the right questions. Ascertain the information that's going to be beneficial to you. Do you care what color I like, Marcy? Nobody don't care. What's your favorite movie? Who cares? Have you ever been arrested? Can I have your full name? All of those questions that mean something. Listen, let me give you a true story. I remember, good God Almighty, I remember meeting this girl, and I would tell you she played the game to a T, and I stopped messing with her because I couldn't break through. She would ask me questions. We would meet out. She paid for her own stuff. All of that. And she didn't care about none of that stuff. She didn't care about what I like to do. She kept talking about relationship stuff. And I didn't want to talk to her about it. I was married. Can I come over and see you? Right? Those are important questions. If I feel like coming over, can I come see you? Now I'm fumbling. No, you can't come see me. Why do I never meet the family? Why am I never invited to your house? Right? All these things matter. Because what happens is when we're unhealed, the only thing we do good is lie, and most of us are not good at that.
Right.
Because we're still masking our insecurities and our pain. And if you think about it, and I can tell you, I can give you a truth of mine, is that the only time I felt power is when I had more than one woman. Because I was so insecure, and I'm smart, not thinking I'm intelligent, that the more women I met, the more power I believed, and it made me feel good, and the more power I thought I had. And then it's like you say, it led me into asking for money. Would you buy me for my birthday? Let me borrow $200. I had women buy me cars. I remember a time, and this is true. I remember a young lady I met. Now, I really didn't have no interest in her, but I knew she was getting $20,000 settlement. And it was coming soon, and a house and a trust. And I prayed on that woman. I told her everything she wanted to hear until she got that money. And then she bought me a Honda Accord. This was like early 90s. Bought me a Honda Accord. And I was smart enough to say, put it in my name. And that's my point. We're playing these games. We don't care. In many cases, we don't really care about these women. We're just playing the game and trying to use them. I hear women all the time tell me that. Well, why are they cheating? Because, first of all, these men are unhealed. It's not that they're not real men. They're real men. They're just unhealed men, right? And here again, we've been given the blueprint, and that's the blueprint that many of us follow. Look at Kevin Hart. I love Kevin Hart. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter with your money. They still out doing stuff that they're not supposed to be doing. So it has nothing to do with our status. It has nothing to do with any of those things. And the truth of the matter is, if you got that much power and you got that much money and you're unhealed, it makes it that much more difficult for you. Because you got them coming. These athletes, you got them coming at you. And then they get accused of rape and all this other. And these guys still haven't learned their lesson. Because we're one-track mind. It's what we've been trained to do, blueprint we see.
So I have a question. So my question is, first of all, women want sex just as much as men do. So I don't even think necessarily that it's about the sex. Correct me if I'm wrong. But what is it then that makes, because like when you were talking about your wife earlier on in the show, and you're like, I fell in love with her. She was everything that I wanted. She was intelligent. She was beautiful. She was built the way I wanted. Like everything was everything. But yet you still went and did X, Y, Z, A, B, and C. So what is it? Is it a thing? Is it just the fact that that individual is not healed? Like where do we begin to end the cycle?
Well, the first thing is, I can tell you, it's like getting a Bentley coupe and you ain't never had a Bentley coupe. It's like getting a lot of money. When you hear people get a lot of money in our community, they start going by stuff that don't make no sense. I got a woman who I'm not ready for, basically, right? I got this big contract that I'm not ready for. I ain't never had no financial guidance. So we do stupid stuff with our money. My behavior didn't change because I got a great woman.
Right.
That's my point. Getting married does not solve your issue. You got to get to the root of your situation, why you operate and function that you do. The only time the cycle is going to change is when you decide for it to change. And I realize there's a lot of peer pressure out there. You might be hanging out with the wrong people because, you know, men, we can get in these groups with our friends, and they be like, hey, man, she ain't going to know nothing, man. Ain't nobody going to tell on you. It's always encouragement and influence to do something you shouldn't be doing. Why? Because most of us do it. And that's our issue. The cycle doesn't stop, Marcy, until I decide for it to stop, until
right.
I say enough. Until I say it's time to heal, that's when it stops. But as long as, and if I'm not looking for that, as long as there's women out there that's vulnerable and don't care, then men keep doing what they're doing because it's too successful. It's open. The doors are open. The right questions are not being asked. Women put up with some of our nonsense. You know, he cheated on you 5 times and you still with him. So now we're dealing with low self-esteem issues in that relationship with that woman. So we all have to heal. That whole notion about hurt people, that is a fact. Whether you in church or outside of the church, whether you in power or not in power. I mean, y'all can think about how many pastors and preachers that cheated on their wives. It happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening? Are the pastors the alcoholics and not telling nobody out there gambling and drinking? I knew a pastor that I saw in the casino in Las Vegas that was drinking. I spoke to him. He walked right past me like he didn't see me. So he had been caught. And when I saw him, I said, oh, man, you didn't see me? You know, I'm crazy. I'm like, oh, you didn't see me? But
right.
The point is, we're making things. And we hide behind the things that we do well.
Yeah.
Right? And so the cycle does not change until I say, you know what? I got to change. I got to get it together. I got to do something different. And the women have to have that same mindset. I mean, let me tell you, lady, some of y'all been abused. Some of y'all been walked over. And you still settle for scrubs.
Right.
Guys who don't mean you harm. I mean, don't mean you no good. You still settle for them. I got family members like that. You still with the guy? He done cheated on you 3 times? He done hit you upside the head a couple of times? You still with him? So now we in fear. And you know how that worked with domestic violence. Now we're talking about something else. We're talking about psychological issues now.
Right.
And so before we get to that point, we really got to start building ourselves up and build some confidence in ourselves and say, I'm not going to settle for this. And I think that's important. And so for me, when unveiling the mask of the pretender, I was tired. I was tired of masking my own pain and using women. You know? I mean, my behavior was so unacceptable. We went to see Fred Hammond in Magic Mountain. And on the way back on the church bus, I'm rubbing a girl's leg. And she left me.
And she left
me. I'm telling you. Who would think to do that on a church bus? You know? And she got a house full of girls. Huh?
I said somebody with some big cojones.
I'm just saying. I mean, but, you know, the behavior, and I'm a minister, and her girls are with her, and then I show up over their house. They all go to church. I'm in the bedroom with their girl. It's just, man. And when I look at it now, I look at, man, you were sick. And I didn't care about these women, right? I didn't care about them. I want sex, and I'm going home.
Right.
So I got tired of that.
Boy, you dropped some dimes tonight, and I think the big takeaway is exactly what you just said, that people hide behind what they do well, men and women, and that the cycle doesn't change until we decide that we're ready to change it. And then we didn't get a chance to talk about your second book, The Audacity to Think I Can. So tell folks, we got about 4 minutes left. Tell us a little bit about that book, and then tell the audience where to find you, the best way to connect with you, and what they need to know about, you know, if they want to work with you, what anger management, whatever, all of it.
Okay, so my second book, my sophomore project, was The Audacity to Think I Can. It's kind of a sequel to Unveiling the Mask of the Pretender, where my self-esteem was low in the first book. The second book, I was on fire. I believe that I can accomplish anything. I believe that I can do it. So it's only about 40 pages, but it's inspirational as heck. And I wrote a movie, directed a movie, put it out, was nominated for Best Director in the Feature Film in 2016. So I was on a mission, and it shows a contrast from when how I felt about myself in the beginning until I started believing in myself. So that's what the audacity to think I can. I'm also a life coach, motivational speaker, and anger management specialist and de-escalation. You can reach me at Lamont Faison, LAMONTE, last name F as in Frank, AISON. That's my Instagram. You can always inbox me on there. The number to the business is 702-467-0167. You can call for a free consultation. You can set up coaching. You can set up consultations, or just set up time to have a conversation, and I would do that as well. But when you talk to me, you need to know when you come, you got to come ready to heal, because that's who I am. And I realize that I'm not for everybody. So if you're ready to change, if you're ready to change the cycle, if you're ready to keep it real with yourself, I'm the man for you. Thank you, Dr. Marcy, for having me on your show and allow me to present my case.
Present your case. And then where's the best way? So is you versus yourself, your podcast, what platforms is that on?
You can find that on YouTube. Just go to You Versus Yourself Podcast, or put in my name, and we can make that happen. And you will find me. You will see those podcasts that I'm doing. If you want to be on the show, you can send me an inbox and want to tell your story. We can make that happen as well. The books are on Amazon, Unveiling the Mask of the Pretender, or The Audacity to Think I Can. You can put those titles in, or you can put my name in, and they'll come up as well.
Okay. Awesome. This was a good conversation. Thank you so much. I knew you was going to come with some heat. And putting the onus back on us too, and I really appreciate the feedback and the suggestions, you know, on how to have some of these uncomfortable conversations. Because to your point, if they're not willing to have a conversation of substance, is it really truly somebody that you want to be involved with anyway? And yeah, I don't care what people's favorite colors are, but ironically, because I had low self-esteem at a certain point. I could tell you what everybody's favorite color was, how they liked the eggs, what size their drawers was, how they took their drinks, everything. I knew everything about them except all of the things that you mentioned that mattered. So very, very good advice. So I thank you so much.
I appreciate you for having me on your show.
All right, guys, that is it for tonight on the V2V podcast. I'm Dr. Marcy, tonight's guest, Mr. Lamont Faison. Go over to the Facebook group for Voiceless to Victorious. All of his contact information will be shared there as well as links to the podcast. And we'll be back next week. Ms. Joy Empezzini is my guest, and we're talking about the female narcissist and the effects that narcissism has on children in the home. So you won't want to miss that conversation. Again, I thank you all. I hope we said something. I hope you heard something that was beneficial to you and that will help you on your own journey to go from voiceless to victorious. On that note, we out of here, y'all. Catch you next week.